like, stay true to yourself. Just, you know, be honest and open about who you are as a person and what you're into, and let that sort of flow out through your work. You know, don't look at what the best and brightest in the industry are doing, and, you know, try and do your own thing.
Welcome to A Table for Two, inspiring and educational interviews and stories with the best operators, owners and entrepreneurs in business and the hospitality industry. My name is Phil Halani, and on today's episode, we chat to Matt Woods, one of Australia's best designers. Matt Woods' passion for art and drawing started at a very young age. With a passion for art and design, he went on to study industrial design at university. His first job was at Sunbeam, but hated it immediately. Later on, he then joined a joinery company, which allowed him to focus more on design. After a few different jobs and starting to get bored, a new opportunity presented itself, when his then-girlfriend knew the cafe owner was renovating and mentioned Matt was a designer. What started out as giving them some advice turned into a full-time job. He helped create Bloodwood in Newtown, which created a lot of buzz and helped put Matt's name on the map. Since then, Matt has gone on to design some of the best commercial and residential properties in Sydney. In 2011, he won the Designer of the Year. In 2015, he won the Eat Drink Design Awards for Best Restaurant Design, and in 2019, won the Design Files Award. Matt's passion for sustainability is evident in all his work. He genuinely cares about the client's best interest. Personally for me, what Matt has done for our business has been life-changing and something I'm forever grateful for. A great episode for people that want to get into design or have a venue they want to get designed. A quick shout out to our good friends at ProCow Dairies, Sonoma Baking Co. and MD Providors, who are passionate about supporting small businesses, the hospitality industry, and also this podcast. For me, you know, we want to know a little bit more about yourself. Like, where'd you grow up, and what was your childhood like?
Originally, I'm from Lidcombe, so
the area,
the sort of area. You know, my mum's best mate lives in Penrith, so we were out here a bit as kids. But yeah, originally from Lidcombe until I was 14. Then I've got, you know, two sisters and mum and dad. They all moved up to the Central Coast. So at 14 years old, I didn't have any choice. So I went to the Central Coast as well, which is a bit of a shock to the system.
Yeah, moving from Sydney to
the Central Coast. Like, it was literally, I went to Lidcombe Public School, Homebush Boys High School in Year 7, and it was, you know, really multicultural type experience. And then I remember my first day of high school at Gorrican High on the Central Coast, and I was like, far out, man, there are so many white people here. I'm a white person, and I noticed how many white dudes there were. So. Yeah, big shock to the system. Started, you know, was still playing football, soccer, like played all throughout my life, until I was about 25, and but immediately still played football, but then started surfing, and, you know, did every, you know, grew my hair long, and, you know,
so you become a surfer boy.
Well, tried to become, like, you know, just so I didn't stick out. Like, I remember first day of high school in year 8, and, you know, going to the toilet, and someone was like, "Hey, it's the Fonz." Like, because my my hair was like, man, I stick out here. I'm the guy that sticks out. So. Anyway, so that was...
Was it hard for you to make that transition from Lidcombe to Central Coast?
Yeah, it was like... it's almost like... I have vague memories of, you know, my childhood growing up, but it was like from year 8, boom, that's where all my really firm memories start. So it was obviously a real shock to the system.
Yeah, was it hard? Like, and I mean, looking back now, did you love that time in the Central Coast?
I did, yeah. Look, I made some really great mates. I couldn't wait to get out of there.
Okay.
I made some really great mates. But, you know, from there, I went to Newcastle for uni, like lived overseas for a year. But as soon as I could, I knew I was coming back to Sydney. So.
And your family still live in the Central Coast?
Yeah, everyone's still on the Central Coast. Yeah, so my sisters are there with their families.
Because Central Coast is one of those places where a lot of people want to go and live for a lifestyle change. But when you're 13, 14, moving there, it's a big shock.
Totally. It's so insular. It's like it's a really insular place. Mm. So, but look, it's beautiful and it's lovely. We might not have been in the most lovely part of it.
Yeah.
It's a really nice place to visit. You just, you know, in my opinion, and no offense to anyone from the Central Coast, but I don't want to live there.
Yeah, it's not for you.
Yeah.
And so growing up, like, what was your interest? Were you into design that early on?
I was always into drawing. Okay. So that's like, as a kid, like, I just liked to draw. It was like the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, I think, from memory, were the best. Yeah, I think it was one of those things where people were like, "Oh, wow, that looks really cool." And I was like, I got praise from drawing. Yeah. And so I think I just kept on drawing more and more. And going through, like, high school, I did a lot of art, graphic design, painting, those sort of things. and always liked the tech drawing side of things. And it was always, I was always torn between which I liked more. And then it wasn't until like the end of high school and, you know, okay, you need to have a career now. And I was like, do I want to become an artist? Maybe I want to become an artist. But then I'm like, how am I going to make money? And I was also like, actually, I'm not that good of an artist. I enjoy it. I enjoy drawing, but I'm just like a drawer. Like I'm not, you know. And then I was thinking, well, maybe I could become a designer or an architect. And one of my mates took me to, on the uni open day, we went and he took me to the industrial design class and I was like, oh shit, okay, I've never even heard of this before. And so then from there, yeah, I applied for industrial design and got in.
And so you went to university in Newcastle?
In Newcastle, yeah.
And so you studied industrial design?
Industrial design, so product design.
Product design.
Yeah.
So talk to us about the uni, period where the 4 years of uni, you finish it and you're like, all right, I want to get into designing houses. And
yeah, so I was always very much focused on environments in industrial design. So industrial designers design everything from, you know, white goods right through to exhibitions and cars and things like that. And so I was always more interested in things that you could interact with on a human scale. So like a good example of this is my final two assignments at uni. One was a modular bus shelter, which could increase and decrease in size according to how busy it was.
Wow.
Yeah, and that was a cool idea. And then my other assignment was in the, again, fourth year, was a caravan, and I did the interior and exterior of a caravan. And so they were these very, you know, human scale environments. Yeah. So I never thought about interior design. Like I just thought that was, you know, you pick a paint color and a cushion and that's interior design. And so when I came out of uni, and I worked at Sunbeam for 6 weeks and I was designing like snap points of the way two bits of plastic fit together. And I was like, man, this is fucking brutal. I don't want to do this for the rest of my life. Yeah. And so I took a while to find another job, but that was a joinery company. And so I was designing kitchens and wardrobes and that sort of stuff. It was very basic stuff, but it was immediately I was like, oh, there's something here. And, you know, I started meeting interior designers and architects and, you know, saw how much detail an interior designer actually went into. It was like it was product design, but, you know, just
in a different
way. And so then, yeah, and then I had a mate who got me an interior design job and, you know, that was brutal. Like I hated it as well.
Why is that?
Oh, it was just really boring. So we were doing lots of, it was hospitality focused, but we were doing lots of like clubs and like RSLs and things like that, which, you know, they're fine, but they're pokey dens, right? So I just didn't enjoy that factor of it.
It was because you weren't passionate about the jobs you were doing, like the pokies venues.
100%. And not that I got a lot of it. If anything, I probably got neglected in that job and I probably just got stuck in a corner for 3 years and no one ever really thought about me. And so I was really bored. But it just started in my mind. I was designing things, but they just never came to fruition. Yeah. So
the process, you're working for this company. When was the process where you're like, how long was it before you said you want to go out on your own?
Well, it was sort of accidental how I went out on my own. So my girlfriend at the time, very friendly, bubbly person, and she just became mates with someone, like the barista down the road. And, you know, she was saying, oh, we're designing this new venue in Newtown and, you know, we need some help with design. And then it was, oh, my boyfriend's an interior designer. She's like, oh, so I just started giving them some free advice, like, oh, you know, go here to find furniture or try this or, you know, and eventually, like after a couple of weeks, they were like, oh, you know, can we meet your boyfriend and we want to have a chat to him? And yeah, they just sort of said, hey, this is what we want to do. I was like, hey, I was studying my master's in sustainable architecture at the time.
Okay.
And so I was like, well, hey, I'd love to do it as sustainably as possible. And they were like, yeah, awesome. Like we're going into Newtown. Like I lived in Newtown. Like
it
made sense. And you know, I had no idea who these people were or what their venue was about to become, but you know, it was right at the beginning of the sort of small bar licenses as they were giving them out. I think, and it was Bloodwood was the project, and I think it was like the fifth venue to be given a small bar license, and it blew up.
Really?
Yeah, so it just sort of...
What was it at Bloodwood? Was it
in Bloodwood, yeah. Okay. Bloodwood Newtown, still there. It's like 11, 12 years later, it's still there.
How does that make you feel, your first venue you designed?
Well, it was surreal. Like, it was really strange. Like, I just thought I was going to do this job and, you know, didn't really think much of it, but I knew there was an opportunity there and, you know, so I just invested, you know, all my passion and time and energy into it when I could, like on weekends and in between stuff. It's completely different to what I would do now, or it was a completely different process in terms of, you know, just the concept and documentation. Yeah. It was really light, but it was fun. And Yeah, but it, like, you know, it was super surreal at the time. That's like, because awesome. the three chefs that originally opened it, they all had an industry name. You know, they were well known chefs. They'd all worked at Claude's together, and
oh wow,
yeah. So they'd been moving in you know, fine dining circles for a while, yeah. And then they had this idea to create, like, Newtown was dying for, you know, a decent place to go and have a meal and a drink, and you know, there was Newtown known for cheap eats, but wasn't known for decent dining, yeah. And look, man, it was the right place at the right time, you know. So.
And so from that experience, was it like, I can do this, I can go out on my own now?
Well, I think my previous boss sort of, I told him what I was doing. And, you know, he was supportive of it. But I think once it sort of blew up, he was less supportive of it.
Because you weren't spending less time.
Yeah, well, and then, you know, they were like monitoring my email account. Like, there was all this stuff. And so, look, I got fired from that.
Really?
Yeah, I got fired from that job. Which is, you know, looking back, it was, you know, the best thing that could have ever happened to me. Because it sort of made me...
Go out.
Well, and it was sort of, again, it was sort of accidental. Like, you know, it wasn't like the phone was ringing off the hook, but, you know, some people were reaching out and saying, oh, hey, we like this venue, would you design ours? And so I was designing some, it took a good 2 years before it really started to take off. So I was probably doing contract work for about 2 years and, you know, designing little things on the side. Mm. But yeah.
And so, I mean, that's pretty amazing how things work out, right?
Like, yeah, totally.
You got this opportunity to do it, kind of get fired.
Exactly. It was a bit of dumb luck.
Yeah. There, so. And so, I mean, it's funny because a lot of people always ask, is Matt Woods a designer, stylist, interior designer? What would you describe what you do?
I just blanket, just design. Like, I'm a designer. So, cool. And, you know, if you've got something that you want me to design, I'll design it.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Like, I'll you know, try my hands at most things. Like, there's things that I know that I have tried my hand at that I know is not a waste. Well, it's a waste of my time, but it's probably more a waste of a client's time to have me do it.
Yeah,
you know, like graphic side of things. Like, I could do it and I can do it. I've done it in the past, but the amount of effort that I need to put into it to get out the result that I just know we could go to someone who does this for a living and you're going to get a much better result much quicker. Like, so it's that's that side of things I won't do, but like, you know, anything from a built environment perspective, I'll give a go.
And what, so obviously the name Killing Matt Woods is the name of your
business. Well, officially it's Matt Woods Design, but it's become known as Killing Matt Woods.
And what's the reason for that?
Again, when I sort of was out looking for a job, and this was actually before I designed Bloodwood, like I was sending my resume out to people, again, just a bit bored sitting in that corner of that previous company, and I was like, how am I going to differentiate myself from the plethora of people out there applying for jobs who have, you know, I wanted to do interior design, but my skill set wasn't necessarily interior design based. I had a very strong industrial design portfolio, but not a lot of interior work in there. So I thought that was a good way of differentiating myself and getting me through the door. So I started a little, like a blog at the time. It wasn't a proper website, but it was just, you know, Killing Matt Woods, click on this link to see my portfolio. And it opened a lot of doors. Like, people definitely wanted to meet me.
Wow.
But no one wanted to employ me. Yeah. And they all said the same thing. Oh, look, you've got a really strong industrial design portfolio. We like the idea of having you do some interior style work, but you need more interiors in your portfolio, which I knew. So it didn't quite work, but it sort of was just a legacy, which sort of then flowed on into the business. So I was just using that blog page as an initial holding page of my portfolio, and, you know, just become the name now.
But so. I think what makes you so unique is the fact that you do things like that, and it just intrigues people.
And that's it
brings them in, right?
100%. And that's, you know, look, hospitality is all about that. You know, it's like, sure. and I did say this. I said this to many clients. You know, it might not necessarily be what you like, but, you know, how can we engage people?
Yeah.
How can we turn their heads? You know, get them in off the street, get them across the lease line. How do we do that? And that's, you know.
Well, I remember talking about what we like and what we don't like. I remember when we engaged you to Percy Plunkett.
Yeah.
Obviously, you were supposed to come out and visit.
Yeah.
You broke your foot the night
before. I broke my foot the night before.
So we had to drive out and pick you up.
Yeah,
did. We wanted to meet you and we knew you were the right guy for the job. But I remember we had all these ideas of what we wanted Percy's to look like.
Mm.
But you just come in and you just gave us something completely different.
Yeah.
And like, how is it when you're doing that, when you're working with clients, like some people have this idea in their head, but then you're looking going, nah, that's not.
Well, I hope that it wasn't completely different. I hope that it was like a better version of.
It was 100%. Yeah. But I mean, how do you manage a client's expectation when they say they want this, but you're looking going, no, I think this is the right way to go.
Yeah. Well, that's part of the job, right? Yeah. Like I've often said, like, especially with residential projects, you can sometimes be a marriage counsellor, right?
For sure.
You know, like, and when you're dealing with partnerships, you know, it's often taking two people's different ideas and trying to find the cohesive path. Yeah. Between them, but you know, like, as you've seen my drawings, like I love drawing. So yeah. I really like wowing clients with an initial concept.
Yeah.
And, you know, for me, it's very important to have a story. Like I don't just like making things look good to yeah. make them look good. I want there to be a cohesive story that, you know, what's the concept behind this venue? Yeah. So yeah. And I think that if I can just present a really strong idea, which is the concept, and then follow that up with a bunch of, you know, really interesting drawings yeah. to really help sell that idea, then, you know, 99% of the time that works.
And so talk to us about the design process. So, you know, there's people out there that want to open their first shop. If they were to engage you, what's the process?
Look, you know, as we experienced, we'd have that initial chat, come out, do a site visit, you know, engage or gauge how serious you guys are, because, you know, look, I get a lot of inquiries, you know, people yeah. have, you know, $30,000-$40,000, and $30,000-$40,000 is a lot of money, but, you know, it's not enough to open a venue.
Yeah,
so that's sort of filtering out that side of things. And then, yeah, once I'm engaged and on board, we go through a bit of a master planning process, figuring out where everything's going to go, and, you know, do that via a series of sketch floor plans, and then working on into this concept, as I just discussed. Once we're all happy with that, we'd move on into, you know, often approvals documentation, you know, having to get a tick of approval from either the centre or from through council, or we can sometimes go via what they call a complying development certificate. But there's a whole approvals process that is generally around cafes and restaurants, especially, something that people often miss and don't really realise is there. And then from there, you know, into a whole set of construction drawings. So, you know, some really detailed drawings that we can then give off to a builder to
yeah.
to price and build.
And so for you, because you enjoy the creative side of things, and you're a one-man band.
Yeah, I'm a one-man band.
So you do mostly, everything yeah. most of the time.
Yeah,
so
most of the time.
You pick
yeah.
up the phone call, initial consult. To
well, I often screen my calls. don't call me. Send me a message. If you want to call me, don't call me.
send
me a message.
You're one of those.
Yeah, I'm totally one of those. I'm like, who the fuck is this? I'm not answering that.
I mean, so you're a one-man band. So yeah. how do you manage? I mean, you love the creative side, but you also you got to deal with a lot of the council paper. And I've seen the amount of work yeah. you do for what you get paid. Like, sometimes you look and you're like, you're probably underpaid.
Like, yeah, well, like, I do try to keep, and that's part of the reason why I'm a one-man band. I do want to keep things as modest as possible. Like, I obviously want to make money, but I'm not in it for the money.
Oh,
like,
you can tell that 100%.
Yeah. So, like, you know, yeah, I want to make money. I'm not in it for the money, but, you know, like, it's, I actually enjoy most of the process. Like, I don't know. It's part of yeah. the. There's very few things about the design process that I don't enjoy. So I like getting stuck into it.
Does it limit you to how many projects you can take because you are a one-man band?
It definitely does. Yeah. Which is, you know, advantageous as well.
Yeah.
So, you know, I like working with, you know, some bigger clients and people that have done it before. You know, there's, you know, great satisfaction in being able to go and spend, you know, a couple of million dollars on a project. Like, that's awesome. But, like, I also really like helping out people who have never done it before
yeah,
and
yeah.
who are passionate, and that's their vision, and, you know, they want to create this amazing, like yourself when we first met. Like, you know, you were really passionate about what you wanted to do, and immediately it makes me want to work with someone.
Yeah, and it just, the working relationship was very good, even though I was calling you every 15 minutes.
Well, that's fine, you know, like, yeah. it's which, you know, that's maybe the most difficult part of the job often, that people are nervous and, you know, you are spending, you know, $1 million, however much money it is, like, their life savings on, yeah. on a project. And so, you know, like, making sure that they're getting what they're after is yeah. Obviously a big part of it. And that's why I like being in control of all of those different stages, because my hand touches absolutely every single stage of a design. Yeah. So
I think that's why you develop those friendships and relationships, because you are so hands-on with the project,
totally.
Right? So
totally.
A lot of the other bigger designers, they got the name, but then they'll send you off to one of their juniors that designing the project, right?
I guarantee you every single one of them is doing
that.
And
so that's whenever a lot of people ask me, like, should we reach out to Matt Woods? I'm like, you're dealing with Matt Woods.
Yeah.
You're getting 100% of Matt Woods.
Yeah.
And I think that's what's special about your project. So,
thanks, bro.
You talked about that project Bloodwood.
Yeah.
But you won your first award in 2015 for, is it Becafico.
Yeah, Becafico was that was the very first restaurant award that I won. I'd won another one previous to that.
Well, check on the website.
Yeah, that's right. But go to the website. Yeah. Yeah.
Talk to us about that process. So the first award you won before that.
Yeah.
What year was that?
That was like my second year.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, yeah. So it was like it was a People's Choice Award. So it was like an emerging designer award. Okay. So, yeah.
But the
that was surprising, but yeah.
So you win so 2000, and what year was Bloodwood?
2009.
Then a few years later.
2010. Yeah, something like that.
A few years later, you win the award for the People's Choice Award.
Yep.
And then 2015, you win the...
Which is
one of the biggest awards to win in the industry, right?
The Eat Drink Design Awards, yeah. It's definitely one of the biggest ones, yeah.
Talk to us about that build, that fit out, and then you're winning.
Yeah, so it was interesting. Like, the fit out... so it was a client of mine who had been a client of mine and designed a couple of restaurants for him in the past, Les. And he had this idea of doing... it was a bit weird. But an Italian restaurant, but with sort of like a minimal Scandinavian fit out. And I was like, how the fuck... oh, sorry. Minimal Scando, but also sort of beachside inspired. And I was like, what the hell is going on
here?
Good luck. Yeah, yeah. And I was like, so, you know, like... I guess I racked my brain, well, how does this all work together? But again, as we talked about before, it was finding those three different contrasting elements and getting a cohesive path between them all. So, you know, I came up with what was what I thought was a pretty strong concept, and, you know, it looked cool. It got built and it looked really cool. And it was in a weird area in Waterloo, in that sort of Dank Street. Dank Street, is that what it's called? Dank Street, yeah. Dank Street, Waterloo, and... just such a weird spot in Sydney. And look, it opened up to, you know, great fanfare, and, you know, design jumped onto it. And, you know, I think it was, which is often the thing with design awards, like the sort of, not the newest thing, but if it's very fresh and it comes out at the same time as the awards, and everyone sort of gravitates towards it a bit. Whereas if something comes out 8 or 9 months earlier, well, everyone's seen it and everyone's a bit...
It's done.
Yeah, it's done, you know, which is a horrible thing to think. It's 9 months old and it's already done. But, yeah, no, it's less fresh. So I think it was, again, right place, right time, you know, went into the awards and it won. And it was, like, super, again, super surreal and super surprising. I did not expect it at all. I was hoping for a commendation. But then, yeah, we were at the awards and it's, like, all the commendations went through and I was like... oh, man, I didn't even get a commendation. And then I was like, unless I won. And then, yeah, they, like, called out my name and, like, I was like, oh, yeah. Wow. So, yeah, super, super
weird. At that point, like, what an amazing achievement, right? To win that, I mean, there's hundreds of cafes that are built or restaurants that are built over that year. So,
yeah.
Did things blow up for you after that?
Yeah, they did. Yep, definitely more inquiries. Whether or not there was more work or not, it's hard to say. It's one of those things which I've, over the years, it's really hard to pinpoint sort of where work comes from. The awards definitely help, magazine articles definitely help, but I think the majority of it is word of mouth.
Yeah.
So, you know, working with people who recommend me to other people, and, you know, it's one of those hard things to quantify, word of mouth.
Well, I think I've recommended you to every single person that wants to have a venue.
Thank you, mate. I appreciate it.
No, mate. It's funny, like, you've constantly said, you know, thanks for reaching out for recommending me, but I'm like, just look what you've done for us.
Yeah.
And I think it's always very special to go back and talk about that. Let's talk about the sustainability piece.
Yeah.
It's very important to you.
It is.
Why is that important?
It's something I've always been interested in. Again, going through sort of uni and doing industrial design, there was a small sustainability component of it, but it wasn't part of the main focus, which I was always a little bit disappointed about. But then when you think about industrial design, it's basically mass production and consumer goods, and, you know, as everyone knows, things have what they call a built-in obsolescence. Like, things are made to break down. Like, your iPhone's not designed to last more than 2 years because they want you to buy a new iPhone. And that's, like, shit. It's really – so, you know, part of the big reason I wanted to get away from industrial design as well was because of that. And, yeah, so going – through the interior side of things and seeing how wasteful the building industry is, and, you know, seeing that I'm, you know, a contributing member of that, I really wanted to do something that had more of a sustainability focus. And, yeah, so that's why I started doing my master's in sustainable architecture. Still not finished, but, you know, I think I'm not going to bother finishing it now. I think I've got from it what I can. And, yeah, look, Bloodwood, again, was that first project which was immediately sustainably focused, and I've just made sure that sort of rolled out through all my projects. And some are more sustainable than others. I think to be truly sustainable, we have to almost stop building, right?
But, you know. Well, I was going to ask you, when someone comes in and you got this sustainability piece, which obviously makes you very special in regards to, like, that's why we love working with you, because you do care about so many things like that. But when someone comes in and says, no, we're not interested in that, we just want the cheapest and we want replicas and we want
Yeah. It's a hard conversation.
Do you turn that down?
I would, if that was a conversation at the beginning of the project, then yeah, I would say, look, yeah, I'm probably not the right designer for you.
Yeah.
And look, it often happens as the project unravels, but I will, like you're talking about replicas, I will, you know, work very, very hard to make sure that we can get some furniture that's not a replica but still meets, because generally people want replicas because of budget.
Yeah, totally.
No other reason. Yeah. And it's like, well, I will work very hard to make sure I can get something around the right price for you. And, you know, that's
yeah,
part of the bane of my existence. So
I remember how important that was to you, because we spoke about when we were talking about the design and the budget started blowing out, and you said, look, I'll find a way to make everything work, but yep, just don't get replica.
Yeah.
And I knew how important, like you said, the furniture and the lighting, please. Like, he's like, yeah, before you do anything like that, yeah, come see us. So.
Yeah, totally. And that would be my two areas where I would definitely recommend not skimping on from a fit out perspective. Like, you can cut corners, you know, in lots of other places, but, you know, furniture and lighting are that's arguably the two most important elements. You know, lighting really sets the mood of an environment. So I always try to get as high a quality light as the budget will allow, and then furniture is the part that almost every single patron interacts with.
Yeah,
like you know not every patron's gonna have a, you know, cup of coffee, not every patron's gonna have a meal, but they're always gonna sit on a chair.
Exactly. So even the blue chairs we have,
which are the most lovely chairs, I must say. Cheap at half the price.
Yeah. Well, look, they look good, and I'm not going to complain about them. So.
I had a feeling that was going to come up.
So for anyone, obviously, most of the people listening won't know the story, but we had a budget, and Matt met the budget, and he's like, this is what we're spending X amount on chairs. And then we got these four beautiful blue volley chairs.
Yeah.
And I was like, they're amazing. I'm like, $800 for four. That's awesome. And then look back and I'm like, $800 each. But
snuck that in.
But, you know, but it was obviously, the biggest thing we've learned, and this is what I tell a lot of friends that want to get in the industry, is like, if you hire a designer, let him design, yeah, or let him or her design, because yeah, it's like, I'm passionate about people,
yeah,
and hospitality. I want to focus on that. Let my designer focus on that. Let my graphic guy focus on that.
100%.
And I think for us, Matt, like, we've let you, and with the future projects as well, we've let you run with it 100%.
And you really have. Yeah. And it's been great. And look, I think I can't help but, you know, I completely agree with what you're saying there. Like, you're only as good as the people that surround you, right? So
yeah,
surround yourself with good people and good things will happen. So,
and there was one more thing at first, is the chandelier that you wanted in the
country. Yeah, well, I agree. That was like a bad idea. I'm glad we didn't do it.
You designed the most amazing venue, and I'm sticking to you at 2 points.
2 points, yeah. But hey, look, that's all right.
Yeah.
I'll take the criticism.
When you're, you know, a project like Percy's, I'm going to refer to Percy's a little bit because for me it was a dream come true.
Yeah.
When you see a venue like that come to life, you've spoken about the words, you know, you've said the word surreal a few times. When you've designed it, we've gone back and forth, there's been issues, budgets, and then you see something like Percy's come about.
Yeah.
How does that make you feel?
Yeah, look, it's great. Like, and, you know, more so than the venue, it's, you know, your response to the venue. Like, you know,
the client's
response, yeah. And, you know, like, I want it to look good, but I want the client to be happy as well. So, and you love it there. So yeah, you know, you love it. So I love that you love
it. Yeah, man. Yeah. And it's funny, 3 years on, and I just still walk in, I'm like, wow, this is ours. Like,
yeah, totally. And look, man, it's great. Like, again, Percy's is a real portfolio piece to me. It's something that people are always referring to, and, you know, so look, I love that you love it. It was a challenge. You know, it's heritage listed. We had to, you know, make certain compromises or concessions, but, you know, I think we delivered a really amazing project. So
how is it with you when you're working with projects like, you know, the heritage aspect, and, you know, there's always restrictions?
Yeah,
how do you deal with that stuff?
It's just another barrier, or it's just another loophole that you have to work your way around, and, you know, just part of the process. So constraints often can improve a project. Like, you know, you could argue that, you know, it would have been totally easier just to completely gut everything, knock out all the walls, do all this, you know, which we sort of spoke about doing at the beginning, but you would have had a very different venue. So you just have to really work to what those constraints are and turn them into your strengths. So.
Yeah, and I always say this, I don't think anyone else in Australia could have designed what you designed for Percy's. So
I think one or two could have, but I won't tell you who they are.
No. I'm never using anyone else again.
Thank you, mate.
And I love the fact that you love getting involved. You know, we've been working with the branding piece for Galafrenda next door, our new venue, and also the Orchard.
Yeah.
You love to be, because you want to be part of the story.
Yeah, I want to be part of that story. Yeah. And I want to, and not that I want to tell the graphic designer how to do their job, but, you know, I want to make sure that, you know, it's honoring what we're doing from an architectural perspective as well. So
no, it's, you know, you've actually came up with the name for versus
and girlfriend.
And girlfriend. So,
but look, again, that's just, you know, it's just part of the fun of the job, you know, like not always going to get winners. I know we came up with a couple of different names for the orchard, which none of them stuck, but
We actually agreed on some of them.
I think we did. It's the bloody business partners.
We won't talk about them today. And obviously, you know, you work in your projects are all, you know, across different industries.
Yeah.
You know, you created a pod recently.
Yeah, yeah. The it's like a meditation pod, which, yeah, again, that's harking back to industrial design days. But
So I guess, you know, let's focus on the two industries, one commercial and residential.
Yeah.
You've done both.
Yeah.
What do you enjoy more?
I enjoy them both for different reasons. Hospitality is arguably easier in that you can really get some sort of wacky ideas across the line. Yeah. And not even wacky, but, you know, just people are more prepared to take risks. Whereas residential, I guess people are less prepared to take risks.
Yeah.
But, you know, people have to live in it day to day. So
perhaps more practical kind of.
Yeah, totally. I do think that that's changing. Like, I definitely, the residential projects that Australia especially is producing over the last sort of, you know, 4 or 5 years are unbelievable. So, like, people are definitely becoming more. And I think that's been influenced by hospitality, the way that over the last. I can really only honestly talk over the last 10 years since I've been doing it, because I guess I was a bit naive to what was happening before. But yeah, venues are just going more and more outlandish, you know, in many ways.
Yeah.
People are spending more and more money, which makes things obviously very difficult from an operator's perspective, financially making things stack up when designers are going kooky, you know. But, you know, that's, I guess, what's happening in the industry. But yeah, look, I like them both for their own reasons. You know, it's great seeing client responses to residential environments. But yeah, there's often more, I guess, a lot more time and labour involved in a residential project as well. Okay. They're often much more drawn out processes, whereas hospitality, you know, can be 6 weeks or it could be 3 months or could be two years, depending on the project.
And obviously you won an award in 2019 for the Perfect Storm.
Perfect Storm, yeah, which is an apartment.
That was a massive achievement, a massive award recognition.
It was, yeah.
Can you talk to us about that process?
Yeah. It was again, like, really surprising at how well received that was, not just locally, but, you know, by the international design community. Like, that project went around the world several times and, you know, so I got some big accolades from that. You know, yeah, won a design locally, design award locally, but also picked up like international shortlistings in a couple of international awards, which, you know, from magazines or that I'd been following for years, and, you know, was always humbled to them even recognize me as a designer, let alone be, you know, shortlisted and, you know, for these accolades in these awards. So, but from a design perspective, it was. I don't know, I sound like a wanker saying this, but it was actually really easy. Like, it's a brutalist-inspired apartment, and, like, brutalist design is my favourite type of design and architecture. Like, I just really like the austerity of it. I really like how harsh it is. And, you know, it's based on the idea of, you know, most of brutalist architecture was almost socialist-inspired. Okay. And, you know, bit of a socialist at heart. So I was really like once Sam, the client, said to me that, you know, this is what they were thinking of doing, I was like, dude, sign me up. Like, I'm in, you know. So the hard part about brutalist architecture is it's very concrete based, and if for anyone who knows, like, concrete is terrible for the environment. So it was about finding, well, how can we make this feel, you know, super concrete-y with using very little concrete? So, you know, that was the challenge. So we came up with some, you know, things like paint finishes, which we used to, you know, imply concrete, which actually turned out to look more concrete-y than I sort of thought they were going to be, because everyone's like, oh, look at this concrete place. Yeah. But, you know, using things like micro cement, which, you know, has very low cement or concrete content, glass fiber reinforced concrete, which again has very low cement and concrete content. So coming up with alternative ways of doing things, you know, all done on a budget, It's only a small apartment. But yeah, man, it blew up, which was completely, you know, super surprising. So,
well, you've inspired my wife to bring you in as a designer for our house when we renovate.
I'm ready, Aisha. I'm ready when you are.
She's got a, I think, like a Pinterest board or a...
I love a good Pinterest board.
Yeah, I'm a bit scared. Maddie, how do you stay original with all the stuff in social media? So, for example, when you're going to design something, you've seen so many other designs on social media and magazines. How do you create something without being influenced by other designs you've seen?
It's hard, man. Like, it's really, really hard. And, like, even, you know, when you get stuck on ideas, you can't help but go, oh, I'm going to have a quick little look at a magazine or a Pinterest. And that's, I've always done that, you know. So, but looking at those things sort of inspire other ideas. So it's just trying to stay, you know, as original and unique as possible. Like, it's just a constant, you know, that's part of the creative process. Yeah. It's just a constant, like, battle, for lack of a better term, going, okay, cool. Like, often, you know, I'll be just sketching something and I'm like, I think I've seen this before. And, you know, 9 times out of 10, you have seen it before. But it's about finding, well, what's my interpretation of that detail or, you know, that aesthetic? So, and, you know, looking back, which I'm doing probably more and more now, like looking way back in the past of, you know, how things were done, you know, 40, 50 years ago. But how can I do that in a modern and contemporary way?
Sure.
Rather than looking at things that are current now and, you know, well, you're just going to fall into a trap. You know, it's really easy to look at things that are coming out right now on Instagram or Pinterest or whatever it is. But, you know, if you're taking inspiration directly from that stuff, then you're just going to look like you're bastardizing other people's work.
Yeah. So, and I think you've been quoted, I don't have the exact quote, but saying something like, you'll never do the same design twice. Like, if you do, you'll give up.
Well, I think that quote was maybe like, If I'm ever 100% happy on a job, I think that's it. I'm done. Sorry, if I'm ever 100% happy, I will retire because I've never been 100% happy on a job. Wow. There's always something that I would have done differently or I would have changed. But yeah, if I'm ever 100% happy, I think, well, that's it, man. I've done a good job and I'll retire. But yeah, I don't want to do the same thing twice. I want to constantly be reinventing myself. Yeah. Like, I don't want to rest on my laurels. Like, I want to keep on pushing and evolving and changing and, you know, like the way I see myself, you know, talking about it musically, I want to be more like a, you know, like an alternative, weird, kooky, you know, rock band type thing than a pop singer. Like, I don't want to just go, okay, this is the latest, trendiest thing, let's do this. I want to keep on pushing the envelope and thinking outside of the box.
Well, you do that really well with everything.
Thanks, man. which means like, I'm not for everyone. Like, everyone likes my aesthetic and not everyone's comfortable with, you know, maybe the Killing Matt Woods thing or, you know, the way I present myself as a designer. But, you know, I just want to be true to myself. So,
and I think that's what makes you so unique and so special, because you are true to yourself. And you actually said that to us when we first, like, brought you out to have a look at the site. You might not like what I do because we might not be your taste, you know.
Yeah, so. And that's right. And I'm totally fine with that. Like, you know, like, and I don't want to be for everyone. Like, you know, I want to be an acquired taste. Yeah.
And have you ever had the situation where someone's kind of engaged you, used you to a certain point and then gone and used someone else, but it's still your style? Like, has that happened?
A couple of times. Like, yeah, a couple of times I've been, you know, gone through the design phase and, you know, hasn't gone off from beyond concept or there. But no one, I don't think everyone's ever, you know, taken what I've done directly and reinterpreted it. And again, that's fine. Like, it's part of the design process. Like, there's probably only been one instance where a client has said, no, this is shit, I don't like it.
Wow.
And I've had to redesign it, and then they still said, no, this is shit, we don't like it. And it's like, well, both times I think I've done what you've asked of me.
What
from,
a brief one.
Yeah, and, you know, I think you guys are moving the goalposts, and that got a bit ugly in the end. But, you know, it's fine. Like, I'm happy for people not to like my work, but I'm disappointed if I would ever deliver something that was completely off the mark. As I said, that's only happened once, or it's happened twice, but both with the same client. I think, you know, maybe there was a bit of miscommunication there or whatever it was, but I would like to think that, you know, part of my process is taking a brief and, you know, reinterpreting that in my own unique way. Because what will often happen is clients will come to me and say, oh, here's a, you know, X designer's project that we really love, we want to do this. And my response to that is, well, why don't you go and engage that designer? Like, if you want that, then so have true. Them do it for you. I'm happy to see other people's work and, you know, use other people's work as inspiration. But if people want me to just reinterpret someone else's design, that's not me.
Yeah. I remember once I took you to a site when we were looking for our new venue, and I said, this is the vibe and feeling that I love, but I want it to look completely different, opposite. I don't want it to look any, and you're like, this is what we'll do.
Totally. And that's often the case. Like, I will look at, you know, when people will give me another person's design, and they'll say, okay, well, how can I create this feeling but do it in the complete, maybe not complete opposite way, but, you know, how far away can I move from that original design intent? Mm-hmm. So, like, and, you know, to be honest, I have, you know, when very early on in my career, there were designs that, you know, people would really wanted to buy it, and I was like, well, okay, mate, I will. I'll reinterpret that. But, and, you know, it just didn't bring me project or job satisfaction. And, you know, again, I was probably young and naive and doing it for the money. So,
as you grow, you learn.
Yeah,
it, so.
Exactly.
And I guess... You were working on The Orchard now.
We are.
So obviously the Italian Gallifrenda, which is another project. But The Orchard is a project that's probably the biggest project you've worked on to date, right?
From a pure scale perspective, 100%. Yeah.
And how's it been working? Is it when you're working on a project like Percy's and you go something like The Orchard, is it the same process just on a bigger level?
Yeah, arguably, yeah. Yeah, there's just so many more moving parts on something like The Orchard as well. You know, we've got probably up to about 20 consultants now, 20 different, you know, individual people coming in, giving their opinions and, you know, how things have to change. So just, you know, changing a drawing is a real pain in the ass.
So when one of us say we want something changed,
it's, but, you know, because it just has a knock-on effect and, you know, very few times, you know, on a project of that scale will you be able to make a change without having to let, you know, 10 other people know. So, so it's just easier to, you know, to have, which is why it's probably taking so long in development, or part of the reason. But, you know, just getting all those parts moving again once, you know, you do make a change can be a challenge.
What's the feeling of working on a project like The Orchard?
It's you know, it's awesome. It's intimidating, and often you can not know where to start. Like, oh, shit, where do we start here? Like, we've got to do this. But, look, it's great and, you know, like, can't wait to see it come to fruition.
It'll be nearly 3 years.
It'll be 3 years by the time it's built. Yeah, but, like, you know... maybe I shouldn't be pitching this on the podcast, but, you know, the way I pitched it to you guys, they're just a bunch of fancy pergolas, right?
Well, I mean, when you break it down.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah. When you break it down just to their bare essentials, then, you know, just taking those little bite-sized chunks and, you know, treating them as just little individual components rather than, you know, if you looked at it as a whole, you're like, oh, shit, I'm up to, like, what is it, 300 drawings now. But if you break it down, well, there's only, like, 10 pages per little part, so.
So you simplify it for yourself as much as possible.
You have to. Yeah. I have to.
And so, obviously, what's it been... What do you struggle with from clients moving, like when you're working with them, what is it something you struggle with? Obviously, other than them coming up to you saying, we want it to look like this and we want it to...
Yeah. Look, budget is always a struggle. Mm. And it's not that, you know, I'm never interested in just going out and spending all a client's money. But, you know, getting people to understand, you know, the actual costs of building things is difficult. You know, I think people have an experience of, well, you know, I bought a dining table and chairs from IKEA for my house, so it's going to cost me $500, you know, like...
Little do they know, Matt Woods.
And I'm like one of the cheap designers, you know, like, but it's just, this things cost money, you know, like the problem at the moment in the building industry is, you know, we're going through materials, timber shortages. Yeah, there's a global timber shortage. So things just cost more money. Things aren't there. So they're now pushing the price up of things like demand, steel. Right, and so there's all this different demand. So it's hard to get people to sort of understand that. And, you know, as good as a job as I can do at the beginning and saying, oh, you know, I expect it to cost $400,000. Well, that's based on, you know, maybe the last fit out I did. But then with, you know, things change over that current 6 months and, you know, things come in and out, and again we've got material shortages or whatever it is, and you know all of a sudden it's costing $500,000, and it's like, okay, you know, it's not my fault, it's just, you know, well, it's just where it's at, you know. So but you know, I will work hard, like when things are over budget, I'll work hard to, you know, bring or strip costs out of things and rationalize and value manage, and well, where can we save money? That's probably the biggest challenge, is a budget one. But, you know, again, when people are spending, most of the time a minimum spend for me would be, you know, like around $200,000, but I'd say average spend is probably more like half a million to a million. To a million, and that's sort of my sweet spot. You know, we obviously work on projects which are bigger than that, but so probably budget's the biggest challenge. What else would be a challenge? Look, very, very rarely do we have issues getting people on the same page aesthetically. Timing is often a big challenge as well, especially now. Like, I've never been busier from a work perspective, and, you know, just trying to fit everyone in. And again, you know, being that solo one man band. Like it's a challenge. I think I counted them the other day. I think I have 10 active projects at the moment. So, and all in different phases of design. Like I do have someone giving me a hand with some documentation at the moment. But whether or not that's, you know, super sustainable, as I said, like I try and keep my fees as low as possible. And, you know, sort of took on a bunch of work during COVID just because it was sort of a bit panicky. And,
yeah, for sure.
Yeah. So just whatever came, I'd say yes to. And now that's sort of, coming kind of bite me back in the ass because there's like such small margins on all that work and it's just my time. Like I can afford to, you know, I'll just work on it longer and I'll just make a bit less money. But once you're paying someone to do that, well, all of a sudden now I'm not making any money on it and it's a loss. And it's like, well, my business doesn't make any losses. Like I have almost zero overhead. So, you know.
Yeah. And how has hospitality changed for you? Like other than the challenges, like you said, of shortages of things like that, from starting in 2009 to now, like nearly 12, 13 years later, how have you seen the industry change?
Look, as we sort of touched on before, things are definitely becoming more outlandish. Like people are definitely pushing it really hard in hospo and really creating these high-end environments in or high-end finishes in really casual environments. And you know, as I think everyone will admit, like high-end dining is no more. Fine dining is, you know, all but dead, you know. So everyone's doing the more casual side of dining, but punters' expectations sort of haven't changed. Now punters want high-end food at cafes. Like, so that's a challenge. Like, again, from an owner-operator perspective, like, you know, it makes things difficult. But from a design perspective, like, people are just trying to keep up with Joneses and, you know, like, in my opinion, design's an important element of a project. It's not the most important element. Like I think we've had this conversation many times. If you service, I think service is arguably the most important part to get people coming back. Like you can always have a bit of a letdown of a meal if the service is really good. But you need to get your food right as well, obviously. But you know, fit out is important. Design is important. It's not the most important part.
Yeah, it's super important. It's a matter of you being proud, people coming to your venue. But yeah, the things that are going to bring people back are the the food, the service.
Totally.
The service probably the most important, like we said. So.
Yeah, I agree. And like I think there's like Valentina's, which I know you've been to, which is just open. Like I know a lot of people are walking in there saying how lovely it is and how good it looks. But, you know, again, if they're not getting their food and service right, then people aren't going to come back.
Yeah, and that's like any venue, right?
So, 100%.
I was there recently and just walking in, you blew me away. Like it's a small space.
It is a small space.
But what you design that small space, they must have been so stoked.
Oh, they're super stoked, And again, that brings me so much satisfaction. But yeah, they're super stoked. Like it is a small space. You know, we had a lot of challenges on that side. It wasn't a venue before. I think it was a news agency or something like, or a corner shop. So you know, grease trap services, all that stuff.
It's the just, stuff you love dealing with, huh?
Like we had a good builder on it, so I just sort of, you know, was able to handball a bunch of stuff. But it's just things that just push up your square meterage rates and, you know, just makes things cost more. So, but look, they spent the amount of money they had to spend. They didn't shirk on anything. They trusted every single decision we made on that. And
how does that make you feel when someone does, you know, you have everything in mind and the budget blows out, they're like, okay, we're going to cut here. How does that make you feel?
Oh, look, it's hard, but it's completely understandable. Yeah. Like I can't, you know, hold it against them that they want to, you know, make compromises on the design. It's the most obvious thing to compromise on. And it is hard though, you know, when people end up spending, like, you know, all of a sudden you've got to spend $100,000 on a hole in the ground because you need to put in a grease trap and run all the plumbing and everything. It's like, well, you know, it's money that no one ever sees, but it's important money to make a venue work. Yeah. Like, you know, you can't open up a restaurant without a grease trap. So, look, it's obvious that $100,000 is immediately going to come out of the design budget, but, you know,
it is what it is.
Yeah. And you know, sometimes people will just keep on spending and they will see the vision and they have confidence and faith in both the product that they're offering and your expertise and advice as the, you know, principal designer. So, you know, that's obviously very satisfying. It's also nerve-wracking.
Yeah,
you go, oh man, now you're spending all this extra money.
100%. Yeah. And from a design point of view, who do you look up to in the design industry?
Look, Australia is so, you know, lucky to have a bunch of really strong designers around at the moment. I probably look at more architecture than I do interior design at the moment. Can't even think of any. Oh, no, look, there's a bunch of Australian guys that I look at a lot. I look internationally a lot. No one I can put my finger on right now, though. You put me on the spot.
Sorry about that. I should have sent you a question before.
You should have. Right? I was like, oh, shit, who's my inspiration? Yeah.
Matty, obviously, most of the episodes we have, you know, this is a podcast to help people kind of in the industry. And we talk a lot about mental health on nearly every episode. Yeah. And how people, you know, if they've struggled during it and how they've gotten through it.
Yeah.
From a designer point of view, have you ever had that pressure where you feel like I can't do this and I'm struggling mentally? And if you have, how'd you get through it?
Yeah, not necessarily. Like I'm someone who I guess always has sort of struggled with sort of mental health side of things. Like
from a young age.
Yeah, from a young age. So you know I'm well medicated though. So okay, I keep on top of it. But from a design perspective, I don't know. I probably find design is one of those areas that actually helps alleviate my depression. Like I definitely get stressed, but I can find that, you know, I can just really focus on designing things and, well, that's how I work through it, right? Yeah, like, wow. Oh shit, I'm so busy. The only way to get out of it is to keep digging.
Yeah, wow.
So, yeah, but like nothing that, like when there's been issues that have happened in my life, obviously then, you know, work sort of can take a back seat. But yeah, I think I tend to focus on work when I feel a bit down.
Yeah.
Down the mouth. Like I think I can, I don't know, it's sort of a way to work through it. Like yeah. I can find that I can just, you know, throw on some music, put the headphones on and just put my head down and just go on it. And I almost get like, not that it's quite a flow state type of feeling, but you get, you know, I find that I can get lost wow. in design. Again, I think that's the drawing process. It was yeah. always maybe a bit of a, you know, a cathartic type exercise yeah, wow. for me. Not that I had a bad childhood growing up or anything, but like I, you know, could get lost in drawing and, you know, that was a way, otherwise it was getting lost in TV. So
yeah, a bit therapeutic. With the
very much therapeutic. Drawing, yeah. Yeah,
no, that's beautiful. Yeah. It's a great way to, that's your escape kind of thing, right?
Yeah, so. Totally. And that, like, even at the end of, you know, to go back to sort of uni days, even at the end of uni, like, I just remember, you know, staying up, like, I was always a drawer. I was always very on top of my projects, but like, right at the end of uni there, I was just remember staying up to, you know, 4 or 5 o'clock every night or in the mornings, like trying to just drawing and just getting lost in it. So I think it sort of almost has carried on all the way through that. The only way to get out of the difficult situation is to keep on wow. working through it.
And any advice for people in struggling with mental health?
Be positive, you know. Like, I know it's really hard. Like, it's just, I don't know. For me personally, I was just working through it.
Yeah.
Like, and owning it and, you know, noticing that it's yeah. there and, you know, sitting with it and not feeling bad that you feel bad,
yeah,
I guess.
Totally,
like,
yeah.
yeah. Like, yeah. I again, someone who's sort of, struggled with depression all my life, like actually owning it and sitting with it is very therapeutic. Mm. So
no, thank you for speaking about that and being honest, because a lot of the times, like we said, it's we want to kind of push it to the side and
yeah.
and that's why I try to mention on every episode, because I didn't understand what anxiety was before I opened Percy's and now
yeah.
it just happened all of a sudden. I'm like,
yeah.
well, I must not be the only person feeling like this, you know?
100% so. Dude, like, and yeah, like again, you know, depression and anxiety, they're things that I think everyone goes through, and the more that we can talk about it and
sure.
acknowledge it, the easier it will become, hopefully, for everyone.
100%. And I know we got a bit deep there, so
yeah, mate, I like getting deep into that.
You know, as we start wrapping up, what's one project you're most proud of?
Percy Plunkett. Look, yes. I think Perfect Storm, you know, as we sort of that recent apartment I did in 2019, that, you know, we talked about, if I ever do something that's 100% happy with, then I'll retire. I wasn't 100% happy, but it was probably the closest I've gotten.
Wow.
Yeah. So, you know, it was very, very true to the original concept. And, but yeah, I don't know. That, again, that was just so effortless. From a design perspective, like, it just really flowed out. And, you know, because often it can be hard. Like, it can be hard to go, hey, we've got an idea. You've got, you know, 6 weeks to come up with a concept.
Wow.
And you just sort of can stare at a blank piece of paper and think, shit, what am I going to do here? So, yeah, I think that's the obvious one. But, look, there's many more in the pipeline, which I know
yeah.
that I'm going to be very happy with. So.
and I guess it's that's, I'm glad you touched on that. When you're having a blank moment where you're trying to draw something, and how do you get inspired? How do you get creative?
Like I do listen to a lot of podcasts. Like I think it's about not thinking about it. Like, so like I listen to podcasts, I'll stick on some music and it's just about drawing. Just about, okay, cool, draw a box. Okay, draw a circle. Like just to sort of get the hand moving and the brain flowing, and, you know, just eventually will sort of start to come out.
That's cool.
Yeah.
And advice for people getting into the industry, design, architecture.
Yeah, like stay true to yourself. Just, you know, be honest and open about who you are as a person and what you're into, and let that sort of flow out through your work. You know, don't look at what the best and brightest in the industry are doing, and you know, try and do your own thing. So that's you know, that's what I've done. Whether or not that's a good thing or not, I don't know.
It's 100% worked for you. Yeah. So. And advice for clients who are about to hire a designer.
Look, it's not the be-all and end-all. Design isn't the be-all and end-all. But if you do hire a designer, you know, be confident of your decision and put your confidence in them. And, you know, like, you may not like every one of the decisions that they make, and, you know, just that's part of the process.
Yeah.
And don't be afraid to tell a designer when you don't like something. Because, you know, again, it's our job to take your brief and, you know, turn it into something that you're happy with.
Yeah.
So, look, it can be nerve-wracking, man. Like, I've hired designers, like, you know, graphic designers or web developers or whatever it is, and that's a struggle for me. But, you know, the most important thing is, I think, find a designer whose work you like and, you know, go with them. Don't go with someone, you know, don't worry about the price of it. Well, maybe you should worry about the price of it. But design, you know, design's expensive. Mm-hmm. It's a luxury item that not everyone can afford. So, you know, but when you do it, like, you know that you're going to cough up some cash.
How do you feel about when clients are like, oh, can you give us a better price? And
yeah, look, that's sort of like, you know, like, I think I'm relatively inexpensive from a design perspective. Like, I know that I've gone up against other designers and have had the feedback that I've been, you know, just as much as, or if not a little bit more expensive, which is often surprising to me, because I think, how the fuck are these guys making money? but look, it's just, you know, it's part of the process. Look, I'm happy to, you know, give little discounts here and there or whatever it is, but, you know, like, it depends how realistic the question is. The reality is that, you know, reducing fees often reduces a designer's scope. Like, I'm really bad at reducing my scope. Like, I really want to be involved. Like, I'll say, yeah, cool, I'll take $10,000 out of my design fee. I'm only going to give you $10,000 worth of work, though, for example. And I'm like, you know, next thing you know, I push all the way through and I've detailed everything to how I want it to be. But again, I can afford to do that because I don't have to pay anyone. So,
and I think the biggest credit you can get on that end is after Percy's with Gallifrenda and the Orchard, we didn't talk about price. We just said, what's your price?
Yeah.
Done.
Like, yeah,
totally. And that's credit to you because of what you did for us and our venues.
Yeah, and look, and I want to look after you guys. I want to, you know, I know that it's about maintaining our, or, you know, creating a relationship, and, you know, I'm confident that you guys are going to keep on doing more and more stuff, and I want to be the designer that you're coming to, you know, like, I don't want to, you know, price gouge you because I'm like, oh, of course, our second, third project, I can get, you know, 80, 90 grand out of you guys. Like, well, that's not fair. Like,
but it goes back to who you are, as your ethics and your moral, and that you always want to help people out. And I think that's
100%.
Yeah, it's quite beautiful.
Thanks, man.
So, and talking about some of our venues, so we've got Percy's, the Gallifrenda, the Orchard.
Yep.
Then you're doing a few other projects with my business partners. You got Duck Duck Goose.
Yeah, Duck Duck Goose.
You have the gym.
There's a New Fit Gym. Yep.
Yep. Any other projects in Penrith? Are you moving?
Oh, man. They probably are. I can't think of them. I think that's about it in Penrith. But yeah, like, stuff happening in the city, like, you know, more and more residential jobs happening at the moment as well, which sort of came at the right time. I guess the whole COVID thing hit, and, you know, of course, hospitality almost, you know, shut down for a couple of months. So at the same time, those residential jobs were still ticking over.
Did the Perfect Storm project give you a lot more residential work?
It's one of those really hard inquiries. Things to quantify. Yeah, like, I definitely got more inquiries, but more than anything, I got inquiries. Oh, you know, oh, where did you get that finish from? Where did you do this? Okay. You know, so look, I'm happy to answer those questions. Like, I want to be a designer who answers those questions and doesn't just ignore them.
Yeah.
Like, I want to share the knowledge, and, you know, like, eventually, you know, maybe those people will come back and, you know, will want some design. But, you know, if someone wants to know what paint color I use, I'll tell you, man. Yeah. Like, it's not, no skin off my nose.
It's like, not like a secret.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Like, I don't want to be that guy hiding everything from everyone. So yeah, I'm happy to share that knowledge, because ultimately, like, you know, swings and roundabouts, what goes out will come back. So
yeah. And what's one thing you want people to say about your venues or anything you build after they've seen it?
I want people to be wowed. Like, you know, I want people to have an unexpected feeling, that, you know, just to not have expected, you know, having walked into a venue, oh, shit, I didn't know that was going to be like that. That's the biggest compliment I can have. Hopefully it's a positive, unexpected feeling. But yeah, that's generally the vibe I'm going for.
And what's next for you? I know you said you got projects coming up in the city. Is there a goal you have in 5 years? You want to be somewhere, or is it just more just keep doing what you're doing?
Yeah, look, I'm really content doing what I'm doing. Like, I think in a dream, like, I want my projects to be getting bigger in terms of scale. Like, you know, the orchard's a classic example. I think I'd like to be doing, I said I've got 10 active projects at the moment. I think I prefer to be doing like 5 or 6 projects a year.
Okay.
And, you know, having a really high quality 5 projects rather than, you know, 3, 4 good projects, 4 not so good projects, and maybe 1 high quality project. And that's, you know, that's just getting, that's the dream. Whether or not that's a reality, who knows? One of my dreams is to design like a sustainable hotel or something of that nature. Mm. You know, like, so something, you know, quite big and sprawling, or maybe not sprawling is the right term, because it's sustainable. Yeah. But you know, something I can really sink my teeth into. Mm. That's the dream. But look, there's lots of work around at the moment.
Let's collab on the hotel idea.
I'm ready. You know my other real dream, but I'm not going to tell you. Yeah. Online, all these people out there stealing my...
We'll keep that between us.
Yeah,
right?
That's right.
Obviously, you know, from a design point of view, I tried to cover as much as I can from the hospitality industry. Anyone listening that's inspired to get into the industry, is there anything you think I've missed that you want to add to the podcast? Or
no, man, I think as we sort of said before, like, you know, just being true and honest to yourself from a designer, even from a venue operator, you know, like not jumping onto trends or thinking that, oh, you know, these people down the road are doing, I don't know, pancakes, I'm going to start doing pancakes. Mm. Like, just, you know, investigating what it is that you're passionate about, you know, whether or not it's your heritage or, you know, where you come from, but just being authentic and honest and open with yourself, I think is a recipe for success. So,
yeah. Being true to yourself.
And I think that flows through, like, it flows through your venues, like it flows through other venues you go to, like, you know, you can tell when people are faking it.
So, yeah, totally. Yeah. You can read through it straight away.
100%. And that's temporary. Mm. And the last thing I want to create are temporary environments.
Yeah.
Like, I'm very focused on, you know, how things maybe work when they are coming down, like when they're at the end of life of a project, because it's most projects are going to end, well, all projects are going to end. So that's important. But I think, you know, I think just being open and honest about, you know, who you are as a person and letting that flow through your attitude to life is the best way to be.
I think it's, you've mentioned that a few times through the episode, so it just shows how important that is. I mean, being true to yourself, right?
Like, 100%.
Most important thing.
Yeah.
Every episode, end of the podcast, I always ask the question from How I Built This, Guy Raz, and he asks, everything you've achieved, how much do you put down to luck and how much to hard work?
Look, I guess, how do you define luck? And, you know, I don't think luck's like, you know, you can hold a rabbit's foot or a four-leaf clover and that brings you luck. But I think, what's the saying, that luck is the juncture where opportunity meets preparation?
Yeah.
And like, for me, like, I was very lucky. Like, I had the opportunity, I was prepared to take it, and I took it. And, you know, that turned into Bloodwood, which has sent off my whole career. But, you know, I was lucky that I had a friendly girlfriend who was chatting to the barista down the road, and, you know, they became friends. Like, that was super lucky of me. You know, I was lucky that I decided that I didn't want to do industrial design and focused more on the interior side of things. Yeah. You know, I was lucky I took a bunch of shitty jobs that, you know, instilled in me what I, you know, really made me realize what I didn't want to do rather than what I did want to do, perhaps. So I think there's a bunch of luck in there, and, you know, but you hard work is obviously very important as well. Mm. So, and I work very, very hard, so I'd say it's a good mixture of 50-50 there.
Money.
Thanks, bro.
I love you, bro. obviously, I've spoken, I can't even speak any more highly than I do already of you, and I think you've changed our lives. You know, I know you say design's only one element, but like I said, no one could have done what you've done with us and with Percy's and Gellifrenda and The Orchard. And I'm grateful as a friend and a partnership.
Oh, mate, I appreciate it. And I look forward to many more ventures to come.
Just 5 a year.
Just 5 a year, please. Keep it to 5. I've already got 5 with you at the moment. Just keep it to 5 a year.
Thanks, mate. Appreciate it.
Thank you, bro.
Cheers.
Ciao.